Perhaps the one most difficult scientific challenge posed by music was simply learning what it was made of. What, after all, is sound? Well, by 1600, change was afoot in the way we would address such a problem. By 1600, the alchemical philosophers had, for about 2,000 years, been trying to understand reality through reason. They had tried to deduce truth. Now a new breed of philosopher was inventing the process of observation, what we call the scientific method. Ever since Pythagoras plucked strings around 530 BC, we'd known that the length of a taut string determines its pitch. Pythagoras used different ratios of string length to build musical scales. Halve the length of a string and you raise its pitch an octave. Two-thirds the original length raises the pitch by a fifth, from do to so. Do, so. Pythagoras couldn't tell us what sound was, but he lent a cosmological significance to different pitches. The last alchemists were still talking about Pythagoras' harmony of the spheres in 1600, but the new experimental scientists noticed that you could vary pitch without changing a string's length. Galileo's father, Vincenzo, was a famous lutenist and music theorist. In 1590, he wrote down what every lute player knew, that you changed the pitch of a string by increasing its tension or its density, as well as by changing its length. Vincenzo's famous son Galileo clearly explained what that meant. The vibrating string drives vibrations in the air. A pitch is created by air beating against the eardrum. The rate of vibration is what determines the pitch. It was Descartes' close friend and supporter, a philosopher named Marin Marcin, who converted that to a formula. In 1637, Marcin published a treatise on music and musical instruments, his Harmoniae Universelle. That title was a lingering echo of Pythagoras, but in it, Marcin showed that while a string's frequency varies directly with its length, it also varies as the square root of the tension divided by the string's density. Marcin also recognized overtones, but he was never able to tell where they came from. No one yet understood that a string can support shorter waves along with the one that runs its full length to produce the fundamental tone. Another question outlived Marcin. How do vibrations travel in air? Newton nearly solved that one in his Principia. He came up only a hair short. He thought the air temperature stayed constant as sound passed through it. Actually, the temperature rises and falls slightly, making sound travel faster than Newton predicted. We didn't get that part right until the late 19th century. And so, once we left the old alchemy, not only did our understanding of music change, so too did the very character of the music we listen to today. With an understanding of sound, we could do many things we'd previously been unable to do. Systematic acoustic design of halls or instruments, for example. We were now about to radically expand the size and texture of orchestras. And larger orchestras created another new need that would be served by our better understanding of sound, the need for standardized pitches. You've all heard orchestras tuning to the same A above middle C. That A is normally set at 440 cycles per second, or 440 hertz. And we'd been devising means for standardizing on one particular pitch long before we had electronic instruments. As early as 1619, composer Michael Pretorius had proposed a particular A425 organ pipe as a standard. He pointed out that higher pitches led to broken violin strings. That was almost a half step below today's A. Down through the Industrial Revolution, A generally stayed below that 425 hertz number. The tuning fork that Handel used in the premiere of Messiah is still around. It gives A423. As orchestra sizes increased during the century after Galileo and Marcin, Baroque musicians often used organ pipes as standards, even though pitches varied greatly from one organ to another. By the 19th century, music was intensifying, and instruments were taking on the mechanization of the new steam-powered world. People lengthened violin necks, gut strings gave way to steel, valves appeared on French horns, orchestras became larger, louder, and more lush, and pitches rose as well. By 1850, A's were crowding 450 hertz. Much 18th-century music could no longer be performed at those pitches. Musicians grew alarmed. Enter now physics professor Jules Antoine Lisajoux. Lisajoux had written a thesis on tuning forks. He developed clever means for calibrating any new tuning fork against a standard fork. Then, in 1855, he wrote a paper proposing to set A at 435 hertz. 3 years later, Napoleon III set up a commission to set a standard. He appointed Lisajoux to be its consultant. Now, the best-tuned orchestra is close to, but never exactly on, a standard A. Still, small as these pitch differences may seem, they can create vastly different audience reactions to a single piece of music. Just for the fun of it, listen to three A's in a row, one pitched at 415, 440, and 460. You are very aware of the changes there. Make those changes smaller and you may have trouble distinguishing them consciously, but our subconscious hears what our mind might miss. Here are A's much closer together, one at 443 and one at 438. This time, you think you hear it, but you're not quite sure. So we created standard tuning forks. Still, the French couldn't stop the trend of rising pitches just yet. Only in the 20th century has the pitch of an A pretty much, but not entirely, been held at 440. Today's orchestra players are likely to walk on stage with instruments pre-tuned to a backstage oscilloscope. An electronic policeman holds the line. Only Baroque ensembles revert back to an older and gentler standard, to an A as low as 415 hertz. But even then, that pitch is now set by scientific instruments that would have awakened wonder in the eyes of Marsenne.